Let's reread our text for this evening, beginning in verse 2, the second sentence. If any man offend not in word, the same is a perfect man, and able also to bridle the whole body. Behold, we put bits in the horses' mouths, that they may obey us, and we turn about their whole body. Behold also the ships, which though they be so great, and are driven of fierce winds, yet are they turned about with a very small helm, whithersoever the governor listeth. Even so, the tongue is a little member, and boasteth great things. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth, and the tongue is a fire. This is now, beloved, the second worship service in which you, or rather most of you, have heard James 3 read. In all probability, you haven't got the chapter analysed and divided in your own minds yet. You know, especially if you were here last week, that verse 1 deals with the stricter requirements of those who are leaders in the church, especially regarding the tongue. You are probably aware that the last six verses, verses 13 to 18, deal with wisdom. But the largest section of the chapter, dealing particularly and especially with the tongue, verses 2 to 12, you probably haven't gotten straight yet. You haven't analysed James's approach to the tongue and his arguments and reasoning regarding the tongue. But you do know this, that whatever James is saying here about the tongue, that it is a very serious business. And this general thought about the seriousness of the use of the tongue is the most important lesson in this whole section. This lesson is taught because it is very easy for us to fall into thinking that our speech doesn't really matter. There are various reasons why we tend to think that. One of them is that our speech is not permanently recorded. Books, or even audio tapes or videotapes, in those we keep a record of things. But when we speak, our words just vanish into the air, and there's no record kept of them, and so we think, well, it doesn't really matter. If I was writing a book, I would be more careful about how I speak and what things I say and don't say, but it's only words, and sure, people forget. Moreover, we don't intend that our spoken words be recorded, for often when we speak, our thoughts are not premeditated. We just speak without thinking. So surely, when we're speaking without thinking, what we're saying isn't that important. That's the sort of reasoning in which we engaged. And then we know too that people don't always really listen to what we say. Sometimes that annoys us, but now when we're thinking about making excuses, we can use this sort of thing. I'm speaking off the top of my head most of the time, for sake of argument here. And nobody's really paying that much attention to what I'm saying anyway. So what I am saying can't really be that important. So it really doesn't matter what I say. That's the sort of thinking in which we indulge. And then too, is there not some truth in that little saying, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names will never hurt me. Now, if someone was beating me, that would do me harm, but words don't really make any difference. And words are just little words. Little words from a little mouth with a little tongue. And that's the way James approaches it here. And that's why James starts this section about the tongue by saying, think for a minute. Not everything which is little is unimportant. There are little things which can do great things. And so in verse 3 he says, a little bit in the mouth of a horse can govern the direction of the entire beast. A little rudder can direct a large ship. That's verse 4. Or a little fire can burn a great forest. And we're going to hear more about this later on. And then too, don't say especially if you were here last week, that this passage has nothing or little to do with me, because I'm not in leadership in the church, and I'm not even aspiring to leadership in the church. And we heard last week about be not many teachers, and this sin's particularly bad regarding them. And that's true. Last week, we did say that the sins of the tongue are especially heinous in church leaders and those desirous to lead in the church. But I want you to note that verse 1 is not actually addressed to office bearers. It's addressed to Christians. It says, "My brethren, be not many teachers." My brethren. It doesn't say my fellow teachers. All the people of God, therefore, are included under this admonition. And the whole passage is addressed to and applies to all Christians, male and female, young and old. Verse 10, "Out of the same mouth proceedeth blessing and cursing. My brethren, these things ought not so to be." Verse 12, "Can the fig tree, my brethren, bear olive berries?" Verse 13, "Who is a wise man and endued with knowledge among you?" Verse 14, "But if ye have bitter envying and strife in your hearts, glory not," and so on. This matter of the tongue, beloved, is deadly serious. It's very serious in your life, in your family, in the school playground, at your work, at rest, at play, every area of your life. And so the Bible has a lot of things to say about the tongue, especially in the Psalms. We sung some of those, and there are a lot more, especially in the book of Proverbs, as you might expect, and then here in the New Testament, particularly in James chapter 3. And the point of this all is that we need to bridle the tongue, that little member, or else that little member will destroy us, and it will destroy those about us. Let's consider then this evening the little tongue. The little tongue. First, we'll look at its directing power, and I'm especially thinking here of verses 3 and 4 and the first part of verse 5, and then its destructive power, and that's at the end of verse 5 and the beginning of verse 6, the tongue especially as a fire. And lastly, we'll consider its strategic significance. That's the second half of verse 2. The little tongue, its directing power, its destructive power, and its strategic significance. James here uses two examples to illustrate the power of the tongue to guide and to direct. The first example involves a horse, or horses, and that's in verse 3. A horse is a relatively large and powerful animal, as you well know. And if a horse is not tamed and bridled, a horse, attractive as it may seem, doesn't do any useful work. But with a bridle in the mouth of a horse, you can make it obey you. And you can even turn the head of that beast, and you can even therefore turn its whole body and make it go in the direction that you want. And this is the way it is with horses, just with a bridle. The second example in verse 4 speaks of ships, great ships. And this example reinforces and expands the former example. A ship is larger than a horse, and a great ship is much larger than a horse. And then, too, a greater force must be harnessed and controlled and directed with a ship. If you've got a horse, all you have to do is control the will of the horse and direct that beast. But if you've got a ship, you must manage this ship with respect to great winds. Ships are driven of fierce winds, verse 4. There's more power involved. You've a larger entity, a ship as opposed to a horse, and there are larger forces involved. A strong wind as opposed to the willpower of a horse. But the point is that both the horse and the great ship are guided and directed by something very small. A horse's bit and the rudder of a ship in themselves are fairly small. And both are especially small if you consider them in comparison to that which they control and direct. A bit about the size of your finger directs a horse. A rudder is a fair bit bigger, let's say a few feet long, but it controls a large ship. Just a little bit of wood controls a large ship. And all of this, James tells us, not so much because he's interested in horses or ships, I'm sure he has some interest in them, but because he wants to tell us something important about the tongue. And he says too here that the tongue is a little member, verse 5. And it's a little member, just a few inches, but it's especially a little member if we consider it in terms of the whole body. And the tongue, as a little member, can shape and direct the whole body and life in the same way that a bit can control and direct a horse and a rudder can govern a ship. And this is the whole force of the comparison. Because after James describes horses and bits, and ships and rudders, he says this, verse 5, "Even so, the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things." Now we need to consider here how the tongue directs men's lives. It's most easy at this point to consider how the tongue guides the lives of others. Think of the tongue of Adolf Hitler. Mass rallies. He's addressing thousands upon thousands of people. And people listened. And there were effects of this in Europe, in Africa, in Asia, all around the world. And the tongue of one man influenced millions and millions of people. For ill, too. Or another example. John Calvin once passed through Geneva. And he was accosted by William Farrell. Calvin wanted to be a Christian scholar, and Farrell said that God would curse his scholarship if he neglected the call to the ministry and didn't preach the gospel of Christ. Calvin was terrified at this. Here, Farrell's tongue directed Calvin into the Christian ministry and into prominence in the Reformation movement. And through his books and teaching, he has influenced a great many people either. Here's another instance of the tongue, a rather strange one. The conversion of Augustine. One day he's in the garden, and he hears a voice from the other side of the garden wall or fence. And the voice is saying, in the chattering of a child, "Take up and read. Take up and read." The child wasn't addressing Augustine, but those were the words. He wondered what that could be, and he took it as a voice from God, as it were, and picked up a Bible, started to read, picked it up at Romans 13, and God converted him. Just the babbling of a child. It's funny, too, the things that people say. People could say something to you maybe years ago, and you can still remember it. And what they said shaped your life, and it influences you markedly even to this day. You think of the scriptures, you can come up with many examples of the power of the tongue to direct men's lives. Doeg the Edomite, he had a razor sharp tongue, and he lied about the priests of Nob to Saul, and Ahimelech and the other 84 priests died because of it. Judas Iscariot's tongue was wagging when he betrayed Jesus for 30 pieces of silver, and the result of it was that he died on the cross. And through the shedding of his blood, redemption came to the world. Now our text speaks about the great words and works of the tongue, even though it's a little member. But it speaks here more particularly of the influence of the tongue, not in the lives of other people, but the influence of your tongue in your life. There are two little words which change the direction of a man's life or a woman's. I do. There are two little words that influence your life, then you're married. And that entails quite a lot. You may have to move house, and you may be even have to move country. There's some words that govern the rest of your life. Martin Luther once uttered a few words. Thunderstorm. He was terrified. He thought he was going to die, and he said in an oath that if God spared him, he would go into an Augustinian monastery. And he wasn't killed, and that's what he did. Those words, in the form of that oath, influenced his life. Especially in the Old Testament, we're warned about swearing an oath to be surety for another. This man's in debt. You say, if he doesn't pay his debt, I'll stand in for him. And then you can be caught in the words of your mouth. Let's say he defaults on his payment. Then you have to pay for him. And you maybe even have to be sold as a slave to pay his debt. But these verses in James not only speak about words insofar as they influence our lives in particular instances, but words as they influence the whole character and tenor of our lives. That's the idea. And it's very easy to see how the tongue does that. The tongue influences such things as sociability, friendships, the quality of relationships with which you have with your spouse or your children or your parents and the people that you meet. So that whether you're loved or avoided, whether you're influential or ignored, it's all determined in large degree by that little member, the tongue. And more particularly now, your tongue even directs the spiritual tenor of your life. Proverbs 12 verse 18 says, "The tongue of the wise is health." The tongue of the wise is health. The point that Solomon's making here is that your own soul benefits not only by hearing the words of others, but by hearing your own words. And so when you speak foolish words as opposed to wise words, or you speak too many words, or you speak bitter or cutting words, you don't only hurt other people and sin against God, but you also hurt yourself. The tongue of the wise is health, and I might add, the tongue of the foolishness is damage. The Proverbs also say that we eat the fruit of our lips. We eat the fruit of our lips. So the question then is, what sort of fruit comes out of your mouth? Is it good fruit or is it bad fruit? And that's important because you are going to feed on the fruit that comes out of your mouth. So that if you speak bitter, filthy words, you will have to eat bitter and filthy fruit. But if you speak wholesome words, health-giving words, you will eat your own healthy, wholesome fruit. And of course, the type of fruit which you eat in general, and now particularly the type of fruit that you eat from your own words, will influence your own spiritual life. If you speak angry words, you'll have to eat them, and that will result in your own spiritual declension and will make you a more angry person. That's the vicious cycle. If you speak edifying words, you'll build up others and you'll build up yourself, and that's the virtuous cycle. I actually find this very encouraging. I suppose, especially as a minister, it's good to know that words have effect. So that good, encouraging words can help others for their good. And then there's a bonus that comes along that we didn't even think about. When you speak good and encouraging words to others, you actually help build yourself up as well. That's a bonus, thrown in, as it were. And then, of course, the other side is that our own bad words, which come out of our own evil hearts, direct others and ourselves out of the way of life and bring misery to ourselves and to others. Our text, beloved, speaks of the power and influence and guidance of the tongue. But I want you to note that verse 5 doesn't end the way you might think it does. It doesn't say, even so the tongue is a little member and doeth great things. It actually says, even so the tongue is a little member and boasteth great things. Now, when we first hear the word boast, we think of something negative. We think about boasting in our own abilities and works, and the Bible is strongly opposed to that and says that we're saved by grace, lest any man should boast. And the gospel is all about putting down human boasting. That's the negative way in which boasting is used. Boasting is also used in a very positive way in the Bible. Here's the 34th Psalm. My soul shall make her boast in the Lord. Or, he that glorieth, let him glory in the Lord. So if you boast in yourself, that's evil, but if you boast in the Lord, that's good. There is also, and this is what we have here, a neutral way in which we can boast, strangely enough. The boasting spoken of here is simply speaking great things. The tongue speaks great things. It's simply a matter of fact. The little tongue does great things, and the little tongue knows that it does great things and states that it does great things. Now, in itself, for the tongue to say, I have great power, I can influence for good or evil, I can do various things, in itself, that's neutral. But its moral quality depends on what great things it speaks of and how it speaks of them. So if the tongue boasts, I can start wars, well, that's negative and sinful. If the tongue says, I can be used to sing beautiful songs, that could well be neutral. And if the tongue says, I can comfort the burdened, well, that's a positive thing. But the tongue has that power to guide and direct the whole of your life and others. Now, if what we've said about the directing power of the tongue in itself is neutral, our next point, the destructive power of the tongue, is far from it. Now we're talking about the tongue as a negative power, and only a negative power. And yet both points, both the power of the tongue to direct, which could be good or evil, and the power of the tongue to destroy, both points start from the same point. The smallness of the tongue. It's just a little thing. A little tongue directs the whole of a man's life, just as a little bridle directs the whole of a horse, and a little rudder directs the whole of a ship. A little tongue, and now we're moving to the second point, can cause a whole lot of trouble. Just, and this is the analogy used here, just as a little spark can set a whole forest on fire. That's the argument. Verse 5b. Behold, how great a matter a little fire kindleth, and the tongue is a fire. That's the comparison. Your tongue, beloved, it's just a joke. Have you no sense of humor? And in the meantime, people get burnt. And that won't do. There's heat in a fire. There's danger in a fire. The other thing about this analogy is that fires can cover a very large area. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth. Fires can rage for thousands of square miles, especially in drier climates than our own. Fires can start off in a house, and then they cover a village, and now I'm speaking about spiritually, through evil words of the tongue. A fire can start in one congregation in terms of rumours and accusations, and it can cover a whole denomination. They spread. They cover a lot of ground. And that's the next thing. That's what fires do. They spread. We even got a saying, it spread like wildfire. We couldn't contain it. It just got out and it jumped all the boundaries. And it spread like wildfire. And the way in which that happens with the tongue is through gossip. The Proverbs speak about that. If you stop speaking, then the matter dies out. But if you pass it on, the fire spreads. And then finally, we ought to notice something about the fire that is caused by the tongue. It's very difficult to restore. If you've got a nice forest, some careless tourist doesn't dispose of the ashes of his barbecue, let's say, the next thing it goes up and it spreads and the whole forest goes. Well, it's going to take years for that forest to grow again. And that's what happens through the tongue. There's a breach of trust. And it takes years in certain instances, maybe weeks in others, or days, for trust to be restored, because trust is a precious thing, but it's very fragile. In fact, it may never be perfectly restored in certain circumstances, so things are never quite the same again. So somebody may say, sticks and stones may break my bones, but names may never hurt me. And that's true. Sticks and stones can break bones. Names don't hurt you in terms of breaking your bones. But it's not the whole truth. Because you can lose something through words which you speak about others, or words which are spoken about you. Let's say if your name is slandered, and you can do all you can, and you can have others helping you, but if you lose your good name, it's very, very hard get it back. Behold how great a matter a little fire kindleth, and the tongue is a fire. And again, James isn't saying anything strikingly new here. Solomon had said the same thing earlier, speaking about the fool. In his lips is a burning fire. Let's turn in closing, beloved, to the strategic significance of this little member, the tongue. The good news here is, must sound a lot like bad news, something that chastens us all, is the good news is this, that if you can succeed, and to the degree to which you can succeed in bridling your tongue, you can also bridle thereby your whole body. If you can control your tongue, then you can control your eyes, and your ears, and your hands, and your feet. Because the tongue is the hardest thing of the lot to bridle. And again, there are various reasons why the tongue is so hard, indeed the most difficult part of the body to bridle or tame. One reason is that it requires least effort to use the tongue. Think of a man who's really tired. He's sitting down in a chair, he really doesn't feel up to much, and you say to him, "Will you come out for a walk?" "No, I'm too tired. Can't be bothered doing that." "Well, do you want to do this?" "No, just let me sit." Now, unless he's so really badly tired that he ought to go to bed immediately, he'll still have the energy to talk. So there's the tongue. Very, very easy to speak. Required energy. So the tongue is so hard to tame because it's so easy to speak. Another reason why it's so hard to tame and to bridle is that we use the tongue so often. We use it so easily, and now we use it so often. And we really don't know, and we're not aware of how often we use the tongue. We don't know, for instance, how many times you've spoken today, or how many words you've spoken. There are all sorts of studies and averages, and you've probably seen them in books. The average person uses so many thousands of words each day, and so on. I don't have the figures to hand, but you get the point. So the argument here is that it's very hard to control something that you're always using. And if you're always using it, to put it slightly differently, it's very easy to let your guard down. And so if you can tame the tongue, then it's relatively easy to control your hands or your eyes. We use the tongue so easily. We use it so often. And then perhaps this is the one which is most difficult for us. We use our tongue so quickly. Often we don't give it any thought. It's an almost automatic response. Somebody says something, we're back at them with a flash, and then it's out. And that's why it's so hard to tame the tongue as well. This is the strategic significance of the tongue. It's as if James here is a military commander and he says if you can take out the capital city, you've really won the battle. Then you just have to mop up a few other enemy forces. And he's saying here, if any man offend not in word, verse 2, the same is a perfect man, and he's able also to bridle the whole body. The proverb puts it similarly. Whoso keepeth his mouth and tongue, keepeth his soul from troubles. The mouth and the tongue, if you keep that, then you keep your soul from trouble too. The rest of the body. And then if you can control your tongue, you can control the body. Verse 2 speaks of that man as a perfect man. Not sinlessly perfect, you know, perfect in terms of complete and able to do the task for which he was made. To subject his body as one who partakes of the anointing of Jesus Christ as a king, exercising rule and self-control over himself. Now verse 2 implies that not many people are able to do this. If any man offend not in word, the same as a perfect man, and able also to bridle his whole body, even in the English, makes you think this is a rare thing. Nobody actually can do this perfectly. Most people can only do it very, very imperfectly. And that's where we are. You say, you've been telling us about the power of this tongue, how it directs a life, and how the tongue can destroy, and then you're saying, if only you can beat the tongue, you can control the whole body. You haven't told us how. How are we going to control this tongue? We're going to do this more, God willing, through the series. But for now, I want to say this. Knowing the danger of the tongue, that's half the battle. And that's why James is putting it like this. You read through the chapter and you think, now James is going to give us some directions. He's going to tell us that we've got to pray about using the tongue. And you do. He's going to tell us that we have to read good books and fill our thoughts full of good things. And we do. He's going to tell us that we need to go to the cross. And we do need that. But it's as if James achieves his point simply by doing this. Now if you begin to get a hold of this idea, that your tongue determines the whole outlook and direction of your whole life, that the tongue can burn people up and cause terrible damage and destroy, and things might never be the same again, then you'll be sobered. Then you'll take things more seriously. And then you've almost got the complete victory over, if you can keep this foremost in your mind. And then the good news of the gospel comes in, that there was a one who did bridle his tongue, always, the Lord Jesus Christ. And what he spoke was always the word of his Father in heaven. The Father said, speak this, and he spoke it. And he was able not only to tame his tongue, but he was able, through the prayer in Gethsemane, to bridle the whole body and say, I've controlled my tongue, now my whole body I'm going to offer up as a sacrifice in the way of the pain, suffering, and shame of the cross. And then he gives to us this grace. And he gives us this grace as we sense the need of it and the terrible things that we could do by ourselves by wrongly using our tongues. And may we see that and ask for that grace. Amen.